We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast. It's good to be back. I missed the little vibes that we have in our pre-lead-up song, so good to be here. As always, my name is Steven. I am the host, and joining me are my guys Tyler and Alex. Alex, we'll start with you, man. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. I don't have to do any 3.5 hour streams for another year, probably. So I'm much more comfortable with our 1 hour stream. So let's keep it that way for now.
Yeah, you know, shout out to Kyle and Gavino and Maddie, of course, for holding it down while Tyler, Arjun, and I were in Vegas. So you guys crushed it, and appreciate those other three stepping up and filling the void a little bit. So Tyler's here as well, man. Tyler, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. As fun as filming in a million-dollar studio at the Wynn in Vegas was, there's something about just being back home in your little corner that feels just right.
Casual, I love being here.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back. It's good to be back here with Alex as well, and you kind of get back into a routine a little bit. Before we get started today, you know, I just want to, you know, ask Tyler a little bit, you know, about his experience, you know, attending the draft in person, man. How was it for you?
It was awesome. I think Vegas did a really good job. It was somehow very casual. We thought we'd have to sign in and do all this and that. No, you just walk out. We got practically front row of the back row, that is. And it was great. I had a lot of fun. Of course, it was great being there with you, obviously, Steven and Arjun, meeting some other guys like Jack and so many other people from the Die Hard Bolt Clubs and all that. So that was a lot of fun. There's something about, you know, obviously it's great hanging out with Steven again, but the thing about being there with Arjun and hearing his visceral reactions to trade-ups for linebackers and running backs, it just made it really special. I loved that so much.
Yeah, you know, it's a really unique fan experience in general because, like, obviously things get leaked out on Twitter, right? But when you're there in person and, like, not everybody has great service and my phone died. And so you just have, like, no idea what's going on until Roger Goodell gets up in the stage and says, oh, the Eagles have traded up. They're going to get, you know, Jordan Davis right here, or the Detroit Lions have traded up. And you're just like, wait, what is going on? So very unique fan experience, but it was a lot of fun getting to not to say that Brooke doesn't care about the draft, right? But usually I just kind of watch the draft on my own. Like, Brooke's just kind of like, I don't know who these people are. And so just getting to watch people that you know and, like, can have a conversation with was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was awesome just getting into the Chargers social media video. Another flex. I'm just throwing them out there. the Chargers social media video for the reaction to the Zion Johnson signing. Yeah. And just being the happiest, loudest people that everyone's taking edge rushers, wide receiver, you know, Jameson Williams, trade ups, but by golly, Zion Johnson's the pick. And we were the loudest people there for sure.
Yeah, everybody around us, you know, we were around mostly, I feel like, Jets fans, like there were some Lions fans, and they were like, man, you guys really like your guards, huh? And I was like, damn right we do. Of course we do. So it was a great time for sure. And Alex, of course, you know, got to cover it all live. So we'll kind of see what happens next year. I'm definitely not making a trip out to Kansas City. I can tell you that right now. I will be streaming from here with you guys. So all right, let's talk about today's show. Like I said, we will kind of have our final draft thoughts, but we have to get started with the latest news that the Chargers have signed Bryce Callahan. And we'll also talk about a certain defensive tackle in a second here. This is a fantastic move to me. But I want to get Tyler's thoughts here first, because, you know, Tyler did all this great work on composite rankings, compiling stats and things like that. And Bryce Callahan was actually the highest ranked slot free agent corner that Tyler was able to kind of compile the statistics for. So Tyler, initial thoughts on the Chargers' decision to sign Bryce Callahan.
Much of the theme of the last week, I didn't know he was available. Felt the same way with Spiller, felt the same way with Salyer during the draft. I actually didn't know he was still available. I couldn't have told you what team he went to, but I didn't know. But it's nice to see that the Chargers signed a 5'9 free agent slot corner from Denver, who will be 31 this year, who was signed as a former undrafted free agent, but became a great slot corner with a solid 80-ish Pro Football Focus coverage grade. Although it did dip to about the high 60s in his last season with Denver. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Chris Harris Jr.'s nose. Let me try again. So the Chargers signed a 5'9 free agent slot corner from Denver. Yeah. So they're basically, like, in terms of just looking at that and that profile, they're exactly the same. So I've sort of seen the end of this movie before. With that said, I'm very happy that they're adjusting to, you know, the draft, not really maybe going their way at a certain point. Don't know what their plans would have been. Obviously, they went Zion Johnson and then basically ignored corner in a truly meaningful impact start kind of way the entire rest of the draft. But I did want to bring up one thing on the stream here, which is the defensive personnel differences between the Chargers and the Rams with Brandon Staley, of course. So the Rams in 2020, for those who are listening, I'll try to explain it for those watching. Hopefully you can see it, but if not, I can link it in the description. So in 2020, the Rams three main, I wish I could draw or like write on this, but I can't. But in 2020, the Rams three main personnel groupings, they all had five or six defensive backs, which are boxed in the red here. And then altogether, something like, you know, 800 snaps in those three alignments altogether. So it's 2-3-6, 2-4-5, 3-3-5. But the base 3-4, which is in blue there, was maybe used like 90 times and far below the average. The black bar is league average. The blue is their average. So in 2021, which again, Brandon Staley joins the Chargers, everything changes quite a bit. And there's not quite that same distribution, right? The Chargers had to run, you know, about three times as much 3-4, base 3-4. Yeah, and their most used personnel grouping by far was 2-4-5 at over 500 snaps running with, you know, four linebackers. Whereas in 2020 with the Rams, it was more balanced at just under 300. So I think having Bryce Callahan and really just all their additions, even a JT Woods, just allows them to do more, get out of that four linebacker group, get into more defensive backs on the field, which we kind of speculated, but it's also nice to just visualize the difference between what Brandon Staley ran with the Rams in this first slide here and then what the Chargers ran last year. I thought that they basically just couldn't escape having four linebackers on the field. They had to at some point, obviously if you count edge rushers as, you know, outside linebackers, they had to run their 3-4, base 3-4 so much. You know Brandon Staley wants to get out of that, and I really think that they are going to be able to with Callahan, with Woods, with JC Jackson, and all their other draft picks and some signings.
Yeah, no, I didn't realize that Bryce Callahan was 5'9", first of all, and I also didn't realize that it was drastically similar to Chris Harris. I will say the difference is he's only on a one-year deal. Chris Harris was on a two-year, $12-ish million deal, I guess, when he signed here, something along those lines. But so for me, there's a little bit less risk involved. Obviously, I mean, the real story regarding Callahan and whether he'll pan out or not is the injuries over the last few years, which have kind of plagued his career in Denver. Otherwise, he's kind of the best slot corner in the league. You can certainly make that argument. It's just going to be about whether he's on the field enough. So you definitely do see some signs of decline, but I also just think he'll be asked to do a little bit less, I think, than when Chris Harris was sort of brought in here. I think, you know, he was pretty much asked to be CB3 from the get-go, and then sort of had this weird transition between the 4-3 and 3-4 defenses where he still kind of kept that slot corner role, but also gained a couple other responsibilities. So I think Bryce Callahan being your sort of slot, but like CB4 in a way, is kind of fine for him being on a one-year deal. So I do think there are some age-associated risks, injury-associated risks, but it's ultimately pretty low risk, high reward. And then if he obviously balls out in this year of Staley's defense, you probably let him walk in free agency, and then you get a comp pick for him, right? Like, I mean, that's kind of what I think the goal is for this signing in terms of Staley sort of trying to rehabilitate the career of Bryce Callahan a little bit after all these years of injuries. So for me, I think this is a 10 out of 10 signing, especially post the draft where we all complain, no corners. Getting Bryce Callahan after all of that, I think is really good.
Yeah. So just really quickly, Chris Harris was a 2-year, $17 million deal.
I undersold that one. It was way worse.
I think the last year was 12.5, if I'm not mistaken, or 12.4.
Yeah, his year one. Oof. His year one cap hit was much worse, which is why, you know, the decision to cut Casey Hayward and Chris Harris financially was, you know, a no-brainer towards cutting Casey Hayward. Excuse me.
Yeah, that was when they missed out on Brady, and we're just like, we'll just throw money anywhere. Yeah. And it was $8.5 million per Chris Harris, which is
Chris Harris and Brian Bulaga, and you know, and Linval Joseph, but Linval Joseph was at least good for them and stayed on the field. You know, and Chris Harris at one point, you know, last year, year before that, was arguably CB2. Like, it was just such a bad fit from the schematic standpoint, from a talent standpoint, but you know, he's gone now. So the Callahan signing to me is fantastic, because I think this is just, it gives them legitimate depth and legitimate options, like Tyler was talking about. And you know, that's kind of been the theme of the offseason, I think, is just getting a more deep team. And you know, after the draft, I'm sitting there going, okay, like, really, how much did they improve the depth? Because I think Jasir Taylor, Dean Leonard, will get into them, you know, more specifically down the road. But it's like, they're not really better than Tavon Campbell at this point. You know, so Tavon Campbell essentially is going to be handed the CB4 spot, and just kind of, they're just going to run it back essentially and swap out JC Jackson for Chris Harris, which obviously is an improvement. But now you have a legitimate option to kind of challenge him. And so you have Bryce Callahan, you have Tavon Campbell, who have played some good ball at stretches of their career. Obviously, I feel like Bryce Callahan is kind of the more reliable piece there. And the issue for him in the past has been health, because he's been relied upon so heavily as a starter. Well, he's not going to be a starter here. And so I think this is a really good signing, just purely for depth purposes. Again, we haven't really gotten the full details of his contract. I can't imagine it's going to be a lot. But I was concerned, man. I really was, after the draft, about the depth at corner. I'm still concerned about edge rusher, which we'll get into, of course. But now you have Bryce Callahan, you have Tavon Campbell, you have Jasir Taylor. You have options. And Staley said on Saturday, reportedly hold Keamon Hall in high regard. So we'll kind of see what happens there. But you have legitimate competition, you have legitimate depth. And I think that was definitely something that needed to be addressed. And you get somebody like Bryce Callahan, he's familiar with the scheme. Gives them more options, gives them more depth. I think this is a really good post-draft signing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And just a really good win. Again, I hope they do this with tackle or edge rusher.
Yeah.
Or both. Both would be great. It's just a good way to understand that you didn't get what you wanted in the draft. Like, you have players like Jasir Taylor, who I like, and you can develop down the line, but he's not starting right away. He's not, like, you just can't watch that drop off from, I'm not saying he's an undrafted free agent, but he was projected to be one. And so the Chargers just couldn't go again from, I have the best safety in the league or the best corner in the league, to, my God, here's an undrafted free agent. Like, there just had to be something in the middle. And so I'm so glad that Callahan has signed, even though he probably won't be an outside guy to them. It still gives them options. Someone gets hurt, this person kicks outside, whatever. Like, it just, it feels so much better. And I hope they do the same thing for the edge group.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I hope they do the same thing for offensive tackle and edge. Not to get too crazy, but if you go grab like a Dennis Kelly kind of player for, you know, the, maybe the same, like, close to minimum price you're paying for Bryce Callahan, I think that'd be great. I, you know, kind of did list like Chris Rumpf as like a stock up in my video because they're sort of relying on him to be edge three now. But if you want to go get another player like that, I mean, it's pretty minimal cost at this point. So there's not really a lot to, you know, there not a lot of reasons to not do it. So for me, I think you just got to go after those players. Don't think they will necessarily go after an edge, but I feel like offensive tackle depth just has to be in the cards unless they're really bullish on Pipkins, like Telesco said last offseason. So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. We can talk about that in later on in the show, kind of how the Chargers went about this offseason with the offensive line. But, you know, in terms of cornerback and the secondary in general, like the body types that they have are just so interesting to me because, you know, my first thought of like signing Bryce Callahan was like, oh, like who are you playing in the division, right? Like you have all these route running types with the Raiders, with Davante Adams and with Hunter Renfrow. And it's like, obviously you're not going to put Bryce Callahan on Davante Adams, but I'm going to trust Bryce Callahan to go guard Hunter Renfrow, man, probably more than I would Michael Davis in this point. And so maybe even Asante Samuel Jr. So it's just a really good depth signing, gives them options. I still think that Asante Samuel Jr. and JC Jackson will be kind of the starting outside corners. And then once they go into the nickel packages, dime packages, now they have options. You know, if you have a legitimate slot receiver, you can put Bryce Callahan there. Or if you have a better outside receivers, you can do Michael Davis. You want to bring Mark Webb in as the sixth defensive back. You want to bring JT Woods in as that sixth defensive back. I think you just have more options now, and that's what Staley wanted.
Yeah, I just also think it's really interesting how they're kind of built now, how they have these like long and big safeties, but their corners are, you know, kind of did get smaller in a sense with the Bryce Callahan signing. So that's something I'm curious to see how they handle that in the regular season when they do go against like these bigger star wide receivers. Obviously not like a ton of like those just big guys in the division. But as you know, just play teams around the league, I'm curious to see how they'll handle that. And, you know, maybe you have Michael Davis, but I don't think you just want to rely on him in that instance for size. So I definitely think they'll have to do a little bit of toying around with the safety group and how it's currently constructed as well.
Yeah, that'll be I'm really interested to see how JT Woods does in camp during the preseason. I just, like, obviously you can use Derwin James, and that's the point. Like, if there's a bigger guy, you can just use Derwin James. But I'm curious to see how JT Woods would hold up because I think he's fine in coverage. But it's more of like a click and close read and react sort of way, not necessarily manning up on Travis Kelce. So I'd be interested to see how he does, but hopefully they have some sort of plan here. Cause like you said, it's kind of Michael Davis as your big corner. And then after that, nobody else is. Now I think JC Jackson plays bigger. He just is physically not bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there is Michael Davis, and like Thomas points out, you know, Davis had, you know, a good amount of success last year before he got injured against Travis Kelce and Darren Waller. He had played Darren Waller very tough in 2020. So it is an interesting balance. And, you know, really outside of Davis, the only other long physical corner is Dean Leonard, who, again, we'll talk about in a second. But I do think they need a little bit more balance there. So we'll move on to our next topic here before we talk more in depth about the draft. And that is about the Chargers' decision to decline the fifth-year option on Jerry Tillery. So we're so close, man. We're so close to being done with this guy. I can't wait. I have never been like more disappointed in my life than like going to bat for this guy and calling him as my breakout pick, because you did see those flashes in 2019 and then in 2020, and then it just goes to shit, man. So, no fifth-year option for Jerry Tillery. Ian Rappaport said that he's in their long-term plans, though, according to Tom Telesco. So, Alex, your takeaway here about the decision on Jerry Tillery.
Yeah, I'll break this news to you. He's not in their long-term plans. Like, the breaking news. This was just obvious. Like, I mean, yeah. I feel like the fact that it's such an indictment on Jerry Tillery that Tom Telesco has picked up every other first round pick, fifth year option. Jason Verrett, who could not stay healthy to save his life, sadly, picked him up. Melvin Gordon, first round running back, picked him up. Like every single one except Jerry Tillery. And that lets you know about the kind of player and production that you got out of Jerry Tillery as well.
Yeah.
As I think his character to some extent, and just never improved. If the Chargers really thought that this breakout year was going to be 2022, I think they would have picked it up. you know, if they really thought it was coming. But to me, he's fully out of their plans. Too much of a liability in the run game, not much as a pass rusher. I mean, he got a little bit better this year, which is to say he was less terrible than he was the other years, but just kind of has consistently been the same player, hasn't improved. And I think that says a lot for an organization that has very clearly wanted to keep these talents. Every time you hear Telesco speak at the draft, you know, at the combine press conference, and he's like, okay, yeah, we want to pick up Mike Williams, we want to pick up Derwin James, we want to pick up all these guys. You never heard that with Jerry Tillery. And so I think it's sad. We all had pretty high expectations for him when he was drafted. But for me, it was obvious sort of in 2020 that this was going to pan out. And has been obvious, not that I'm going to do like a whole victory tour here, because I think the team is worse off for him being a bust. As far as the long-term plans thing, I mean, you know, we've seen fifth year option guys get declined and then come back. The Cowboys sort of just did that with Leighton Vander Esch and brought him back for a year. So, you know, is there a chance that in the future the Chargers just go, well, we can't find anything better right now, so here's a one-year, $2.5 million contract, Jerry? Sure, that's possible. But to me, I really don't think there's much of any chance he's back. And even if he does have that breakout season, given the Chargers' financial situation currently, you probably just let him walk and get a comp pick from it. So for me, I think Jerry Tillery, this is clearly his last season as a Charger. His Twitter deletions would lead you to believe that he thinks this is his last season as a Charger as well. And I am sad it didn't work out. But to me, this is the best decision for the team by far going forward.
Yeah, I initially thought, I think I messaged you guys, I thought they were kind of going to play it, you know, safe in the middle. But then you think about, yeah, their cap situation, the fact that they could get a comp pick there, and then obviously Otito Ogbonia, who I do think maybe won't play his Tillery specific role, but can move enough guys around where you could just have a starting three next year, no problem. Where do you start with Tillery? I wasn't the biggest fan when they drafted him, and unfortunately, nothing's really changed. I mean, you know, 67th in pass rush productivity, 77th in pass rush win rate. Like, if he was at least good in that regard, like, Sebastian Joseph Day is not a pass rusher by any means, but he's also number one in run stops or run stop rate or whatever it was. So you do have a reason to keep him on the field. You know, Tillery just not being a good pass rusher and then also 117th in run stop rate is not great. So it was time to me, you know, yeah, Jerry Tillery has been a bust, I guess, compared to, you know, some of the other guys that Telesco has drafted. But I also just think this regime is not going to continue to sink resources and time and effort into something they know it's just not going to happen. And so I'm happy that, you know, they might have done that for like a DJ Fluker, although Fluker did kick inside the guard, so I understand why. You know, they would have done that for Melvin Gordon and whatnot. But I think they just know at this point that Tillery is just not going to be what they want him to be. And so it's a bit refreshing, even though I would love for him to break out. But it's refreshing to know that they're like, listen, we know where you're at. We're going to move on. Like, even though they did sign Eric Banks and that did not work, and we kind of all knew that was not a great move, they at least got rid of it very quickly. And so I think Jerry Tillery, while I didn't think they're going to cut or trade him by any means, it's good to know that they're like, hey, we know what we got here, and we're not going to continue to waste more of our time and resources.
Yeah, and it's just going to be really interesting to see, because, I mean, you and I have both heard that, you know, he's the golden boy and not just by the GM, right? Like, the coaching staff would, during the season at least, was very high on him. And so now you have the fifth year option declined. His time with the Chargers potentially, you know, is limited to just one season. And it is going to be curious just kind of how that role plays itself out, because right now, Jerry Tillery is the only pass rushing defensive tackle that they have, like, in terms of physical profile. Like, obviously he's not super good at it, but apparently Michael Davis is tweeting out a bunch of eye emojis.
Yeah, he did. There's nothing, nobody else is tweeting it. It's just him. Five eye emojis.
Five eyeball emojis.
Yeah. I don't know if that's big news. Hopefully, I don't know. Is there a game going on?
No, I think he tweeted five eye emojis for the fifth year option not being picked up for Jerry Tillery.
Very good synergy, Michael. I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Michael, watching the show.
Michael Davis is in here in his burner account listening to us talk shit about Jerry Tillery, his BFF. So Shout out Michael Davis, man. He was at the draft on Friday night. So
shaved head, man.
Shaved head looks a little interesting. But yeah, the Jerry Tillery thing, it is gonna be interesting just from a profile standpoint, because I mean Joe Gaziano is kind of that guy, I guess. But right now, you know, you have like the presumed guys ahead of him, at least in terms of playing time. You know, Austin Johnson, Sebastian Joseph Day, Christian Covington, Tito Ogbonia, and even Braden Fogel. Like, none of those guys are like pass rushing types. They're all run stuffing guys first and foremost. And you know, I feel really good about that group. But you know, Brandon City has always had that one other pass rusher, sometimes even two. So it is interesting, man. Like, Gavino has kind of floated the idea of bringing in Morgan Fox, and Gavino thinks he can be the third edge rusher. I think he's more of a Tillery type. But like, what if you bring in Fox and then you kind of have a competition with him and Jerry Tillery as that one pass rushing type? I think would be get the popcorn ready for that. That'd be fun.
Are we talking ourselves into a Morgan Fox Jerry Tillery training camp competition? Is that?
I mean, I'd rather have Morgan Fox right now than Jerry Tillery, man.
Probably, I guess, yeah. But like, that's very sad that that's where we are with it. Yeah, I mean, I think the Chargers have just set themselves up to be a team next year that's going to get some kind of comp pick for Jerry Tillery when he moves on. Probably some 6th-round pick, and you try to get a pass rushing DT next year in the draft. Yeah. And, you know, that's a free 4-year contract. You know, with the way that they're set up, I don't think they're going to be players in free agency to go get a pass rushing DT. But it stinks that didn't work out with Jerry Tillery, because in theory, it should have. But yeah, I mean, the work ethic was never there, and always got washed out of the run game.
Yeah. I think the Chargers, you know, kind of transition here. I think they have a clear, you know, line of succession, if you will, right? Like, Tito will take on the Christian Covington role next year, and then Jerry Tillery's replacement will come through the draft at that time next year. There's just no way, unless they sign him to a super cheap deal, that he's in their future plans at all, because right now they're projected at $8 million in cap space. Again, that could change a little bit based off of, you know, where that cap number is specifically, but they can't afford to sign him and then also have Sebastian Joseph Day, Austin Johnson. Like, it just doesn't make any financial sense. And I don't think it makes roster sense either. So they can get a pass rushing defensive tackle in the draft next year. So guys, any final thoughts here about Bryce Callahan or Jerry Tillery before we dive into this draft class?
Hope they ball out. Hope they have 50 interceptions and 100 sacks and get great comp picks for them.
Man, lots of comp pick talks. You know, ever since Kyle came on, we've been talking all about comp picks. So shout out to Kyle, official member of the Guilty as Charged podcast. Go check him out. Go show him some love. So
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's get into this draft class. Of course, you know, we talked a little bit on Saturday about our final thoughts. Then a little bit has changed, you know, watching some film, had some time to think on it. I'm sure Alex has some very positive thoughts about the Isaiah Spiller selection that he'll share with us. But let's start broad and then kind of, you know, zone in a little bit more. So Alex, just kind of your general thoughts of how you would characterize this specific draft class for Tom Telesco and Brandon Staley.
I thought it was a good draft class considering what the resources were. Obviously they were working with one fewer pick than they normally were, so obviously there wasn't that like that day two steal kind of guy, you know, like they got an Asante Samuel Jr. for example last year. But they got the guy they wanted in Zion Johnson and that we all wanted at that point in the draft. So to me, you know, the commitment to being a trench team was there. And so I think pretty much everyone kind of universally loved that pick. I know some people were hoping for like a wide receiver, but for how the board fell, I think that was perfect for the Chargers. JT Woods was a little bit perplexing because as Tyler and all three of you pointed out on kind of the post-draft show, like maybe you could have gotten him around later, but I think with how he tends to, you know, get how he's going to get into the rotation, I think it, you know, it makes sense that he's going to be there, and I think he can fix the missed tackle rate problem. I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue for him, but pretty clearly like an eventual Nasir Adderley replacement once the Chargers move on from him and get a comp pick also, since that's the theme of the show today. Where things started getting wonky for me was day three. Because I had been talking on the show about like, oh, running back in round four, you know, I had been kind of talking about it, and I was sort of surprised they actually did it with the Isaiah Spiller pick. We'll get into that more later. But then because they went running back there, that sort of, I think, really took a lot of the cornerback edge options that were available in round four off the board from them. And then from that point, I thought it was, yeah, obviously they get Salyer in the next round, which I think is really great value. But then from that point on, it's like all the cornerbacks and fullbacks and everything else they took was kind of like, okay, this is a depth special teams pick, which I'm fine with, but doesn't necessarily like excite me. Like Jasir Taylor is going to be a special teams player this year. Dean Leonard is going to be a special teams player this year. So, I mean, there's value in that, of course. I mean, that's what you're drafting in the sixth or seventh round, as opposed to, you know, trying to go get some like wide receiver. And like Arjun said, they didn't veer too far off from the consensus board like they've been known to do sometimes, Alohi Gilman. You know, this time they didn't really veer too far off from it. So I think they got good value out of all those picks pretty much. I guess I just kind of would have changed the order of day three up a little bit if they got, you know, like a Kobe Bryant type corner in the fourth round or an edge player. I would have been happier. And then you take someone like Jerome Ford in the fifth, or if you take a cornerback in the fourth or an edge in the fifth, and then you take who's the USC's running back's name that won the sixth round again?
Keontae Ingram.
You're right. If you get Keontae Ingram and then you take him in the sixth, I think that would have been kind of better too. So I think I really like day one. I like day two of the draft, but day three sort of fell apart for me with the selection of the running back that kind of pigeonholed them into the other positions that they ended up taking as well. The direction they ended up taking, I don't hate the Spiller pick. It's fine, but I'm troubled by the process of kind of how the rest of day three played out as a result of it, when they could have gotten better value running back probably with Ford in the fifth or Keontae Ingram in the sixth, and then kind of just had better depth there. And also the right tackle problem, like Nick mentions in the chat.
Oh, sorry. I thought they did. Continuing, I wasn't as big a fan of this draft as last year's draft. So just for whatever it's worth, people listening, I'm not grading them based on whether they got Kalimak with the second or not. It's based on what they did with the picks that they had. And yeah, it was a bit of a surprise they didn't go after edge rusher at all. We could find out that they completely have an edge rusher, Trey Flowers, Clowney, Morgan Fox, whatever, on tap. But for right now, based on what we know, it was surprising to see them neglect that altogether, knowing how often they used you know, three guys, Bosa inside, one guy outside, and obviously Khalil Mack. And how often they're going to do that this year, unless things are changing, but I doubt it. Why change that? And I get the confidence in Chris Rumpf. No, I understand why fans would be confident in Chris Rumpf, because they really want to believe in him. And he showed a lot of good flashes, and against the run, better than given credit for. And I think that there's definitely a role for him. But like, we do have to consider where their edge three group is at. Chris Rumpf, Emeka Egbule, Jamal Davis, those three guys last year combined, not some of them didn't play, but those three guys, who are their three edge rushers behind the big two, combined for four pressures. And Chris Rumpf, among rookies, was the fewest in sacks and pressures. And among the guys with as many pass rush reps as he was third worst in pass rush productivity, second worst in pass rush win rate. Run stop rate was good. But then among edge rushers in the NFL as a whole, with as many pass rush snaps as he had, 136th, or third worst in pressures. You know, pass rush productivity was 129th, ninth worst in the NFL. You know, 129th in pass rush win rate, also ninth worst in the NFL. Like, this is, I said earlier, Jerry Tillery was like 67th, 77th in those categories. We're talking about Rumpf. Granted, he was a rookie who needed a lot of development, and a fifth round guy or fourth round guy. 136th, 129th, 129th. So it's just a surprise to see them not address it at all. And even if he's your edge three, okay, I can buy that. But to not even go after an edge four is definitely a surprise. So that was my biggest, really just all the premium positions as a whole. Arjun just did a graphic today about the last five drafts and who's addressed the premium positions, the non-quarterback premium positions the most, and the Chargers in that bottom left corner, because they just really haven't. And, you know, that doesn't mean the players aren't. I really like a lot of these players in this group. I went through all of them, watched film on all of them, and I can understand at each point why they took these guys. And I like them. And if we get into individual guys, I'll talk about why. And like, oh my gosh, Spiller in the fourth. Like, even though I would have liked running back later, I understand why you took him, because he's going to be a steal. He's exactly what they needed. There was one of two things I think they needed there, and they did get one of those things out of him, possibly two. So, you know, again, I like these guys. It was just a surprise to see them not, like, what were the mock drafts at 17? And now, again, we don't know as much as the Chargers, obviously, but it was wide receiver, tackle, edge, corner. And those things basically were neglected the entire draft, other than Jasir Taylor, who's going to be a slot corner in the sixth round. So it was just a surprise. But watching this class as a whole, I feel about the same, but more positive, because now I understand why you took these players. Like, okay, I see your role. I can see how almost every single one of these players makes an impact in year one. And that's really great. Like, you do want to see that. Like the Chargers, there is a plan here. Whether you agree with the plan or not, there was some sort of plan here. I feel like the Lynn era, it was just like, I don't know, we'll take that guy. I don't know, we'll take that guy. Like, I want to be a run first team, but we're not going to build in the trenches. We're not going to take a good running back or whatever it is. Like, I at least see the plan, even though it wasn't what I expected. And frankly, I think there were some things that were off about the plan. You know, before we get into an edge signing later, I at least see that there was a plan. So again, I like the players. They got some good value from the guys. It was a nice average draft, but I think they could get a lot out of it in the future. It just wasn't the positions I expected.
Yeah, I think to me, the biggest surprise of the draft was the cornerback selection and coming in the sixth round, just based off of what we were hearing. I just kind of am a little annoyed at how the question marks at edge are just kind of hanging over this draft class. Like, because, you know, of course they signed Bryce Callahan, and that's fantastic. It makes a lot of sense, but you don't have that other pass rusher, and you need that other pass rusher. You know, the chances of Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, who are great players, and Tom Telesco was pretty sassy about, you know, hey, we have Khalil Mack. Like, that's what we use our second round pick for. And I get that, but the chances of those two players playing all 17 games are slim. And so I was wanting, you know, an edge rusher to come in and contribute. And, you know, once you get past the fourth round, the edge rusher pool kind of dries up. But even, you know, I would take some kind of Chris Rumpf competition, you know, seventh round dart throw at minimum. And we just didn't get that. So it's frustrating to me how much that position specifically is kind of hanging over the draft class for me, because I do really like this draft. I like the players that they selected, and I think they got good value, like Arjun was saying, in terms of the consensus big board at each selection. And, you know, that's just kind of where I'm at. I think you can see a role for several of these players, like Tyler was saying. And I think you could realistically get at least four instant contributors, maybe more, depending on kind of how the right tackle situation pans out. But again, I just like keep on going back, like, okay, like what happens if Khalil Mack pulls a hammy and he misses five games? And then, you know, we're kind of just in the same situation at edge rusher that we were at cornerback last year, where Chris Rumpf, or an undrafted free agent or CFL player, is starting games for them.
Yeah. And I definitely don't, you know, hopefully, I just have saying this to all the fans, like, I don't subscribe to the, well, I'm just going to trust. Like, they have a plan. Like, the criticisms of the draft, I think we should all still be able to have them, even though it might even work out. Like, we should all be able to still have criticisms about the draft and not just be like, oh, well, I trust that they have a plan. Because again, like, we're Chargers fans. They ain't won nothing yet. So whatever the plan is, like, we are allowed to be skeptical because it hasn't worked yet.
Yeah, I'm also allowed to be skeptical specifically about running backs because you've taken two dog shit running backs the last 2 years. So I'm done with this. We're just going to trust the process and it's fine. No, we're not going to do that. So I get people upset that we're negative or, you know, whatever, but I'm not going to, you know, Tom Telesco. I mean, we've talked about the draft metrics and Arjun's brought them up. Like, you know, obviously not addressing these, you know, premium positions like Arjun pointed out in that graph. And, you know, aside from the first round, there's been some to like about his drafts, obviously, but particularly he struggled on day three of the draft. I mean, that's been a common theme in the Telesco era. So to me, to say that all, you know, four or five of those, you know, day three picks are going to pan out, I don't buy that nearly as much as other people do. So, you know, obviously day three itself is kind of a crapshoot anyway, but, you know, I'm also not going to be there to just be like, oh, well, let's hype all these guys up and then get disappointed when they don't pan out. So, yeah, I do kind of remain at arm's length distance for some of these picks.
Yeah, I think it's all relative, right? Like, you know, the Chargers drafted Sam Tevi right in the sixth round. And they drafted him to be, you know, kind of like ideally that developmental tackle prospect. And hey, maybe in a couple of years he could become a swing tackle. And then Russell Okung got injured, and then Joe Barksco got injured. And it's like, oh shit, Sam Tevi is starting for us. And right away as a rookie. And then he's in a playoff game. And then in 2018, he's a full-time starter, like legit, unquestioned. And then he's not very good because he was put in a poor situation. And people are like, well, Sam Tibby's a bust. It's like, well, my guy was a six-round pick. Like, I'm happy for my guy, Utah player and all that. But it's about managing expectations for me. And I think when you're talking about these day three picks, like if they become starters, fantastic. But it's just, you know, the expectations behind it, I think, is a little off. So a couple super chat questions here. Make the transition. Wants to know, is Staley doing Telesco's job?
No,
but the defensive additions are heavily influenced by what Staley wants to greater degree than I've ever seen in the Telesco era.
I mean, I think Staley definitely has higher input than previous coaches have had.
Yeah,
just kind of based on how these picks have gone. But I mean, Telesco certainly has had some of his types in this draft, though. So, you know, I don't think that's totally a Staley proposition, though.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Tom Telesco has always collaborated with his coaches, right? I mean, there's the Josh Kelly pick, which was clearly an Anthony Lynn pick. There's the Kenneth Murray, which is clearly a Gus Bradley pick. It just feels like the process now is more refined, and you know, Brandon Staley is much more involved. And so just by judging off of like how they're speaking about things, Brandon Staley has a strong say in personnel. And, you know, I think that's really the difference. So Tom Telesco still has final say. It's his job to you know, ultimately, you know, kind of maneuver the, you know, weighing the scouts' opinions, the coaches' opinions, you know, whether or not the Spanos family gets involved, we don't really know. I doubt it. But, you know, so Tom Telesco has final say, but Brandon Staley is heavily involved in the process. Next one from Senor. He says, Staley seems to give a lot of blind trust in some of these guys, i.e. Chris Rumpf. And then he wants to know thoughts on Tillery possibly playing outside 6-7-9 technique and 5 technique. So First thing about the blind trust, I think that is true to an extent. Like we saw with Eric Banks, like we saw with some of his other guys, Trey Marshall, you know, who was kind of that free agent signing, and he just kept on trusting. So I think that's part of that is first year jitters, if you will, first year head coach kind of trying to figure out who he can rely upon, who kind of knows his scheme, things like that. So I think, like all things, Brandon Staley is going to improve as a second year head coach. And I'm hoping that the roster management aspect of coaching is something that he does improve upon. And I think he will. As for Jerry Tillery playing on the outside, like, I guess on sub packages occasionally, but we also did this whole thing in 2020 with Gus Bradley, and it didn't exactly go well. So I'm kind of over finding Jerry Tillery a spot. Like, just play the other guys that are better.
Yeah. I we've answered the Jerry Tillery at edge question 500 times. No.
I mean, I don't want to say they have, there are some blind trust issues, I feel like, or maybe I'm just going to throw a guy out there and there's no accountability. I think accountability might be where I'd say it, not really blind trust as much as like, well, we're just going to trot out Murray, Tillery, and just like 80% of the snaps, baby, let's go. But Chris Rumpf, I don't want to say like there's blind trust. I just think it's a leap. Like, if you trust him to be edge three, yeah, it's probably because they saw something. And there are things like in my mind, in our minds, we can create a scenario where Chris Rumpf has bulked up, improved, learned, makes this huge jump. It's just, to me, it just relying on it is pretty ridiculous. And even then, even if you do believe in him, edge four, at least do something there. I think the blind, if they go into the season with Jamal Adams and Ty Shelby as their edge four, that to me is blind trust. Then it would be like, well, what did you base that off of? You know, the one guy hasn't played, an undrafted free agent. Another guy hasn't played in the NFL since 2019, where he had 15 snaps or whatever. Like, that being your edge four is certainly a problem.
Well, I mean, currently the edge four is Tyler's best friend, Emeka Igbele.
Well, Tom Telesco hasn't really talked about Emeka. He's talked more about the Jamal Davis guy. So I kind of think that maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah.
Super chat from Alex Silva. Tom Telesco trusts in these CFL guys, XFL, et cetera. I'm sure they're just going to trust Jamal Davis to be edge three, edge four, like they did for Storm Norton. That is kind of a good point. I guess Storm Norton.
I mean, Storm Norton beat out Trey Pipkins. Like, I don't think they signed Storm Norton with the intent of having him be the swing tackle. I think he just beat out Trey Pipkins for that job.
Trey Pipkins beat himself out. did Norton play much in 2020?
He did towards the back half.
Yeah, it was more towards the back end. Yeah. So when they played the Saints, when Bulaga was injured and then Tebby got injured, then he came in. And then once they kind of got sick of Pipkins a little bit, they went to Norton at the end of the season.
Yeah, one of my favorite stats from 2020 is that Storm Norton had the highest PFF grade of any Chargers offensive lineman that year.
Yeah, and look how that went, man. It was great stuff. So I was looking at Trey Pipkins the other day because I was working on an article for LAFB, and went back and looked at Trey Pipkins' preseason numbers from this past year, and it was very ugly. It was not pretty at all. But yeah, so we'll see. We'll talk a little bit about the offensive line in a second. Just wanted to get to those super chat questions. So all right, let's start with a positive note. Let's talk about our favorite picks first and foremost. Tyler, why don't you kick us off here?
Okay, so I mean, I jumped and cheered and cried practically for Zion Johnson, but I'm not going to get into that because that's pretty obvious. Jamari Salyer, I'm waiting to hear what that medical issue, whatever it might have been, because I don't know why he would have fallen pretty much consistently a third round guy at the worst. Maybe fourth, but sixth with odds. So I don't know what happened there. So as far as favorite picks go, but the next one that I actually found was my favorite has been the one I've been diving into a lot, and that is Isaiah Spiller. And I don't remember where Alex had him ranked. I know I liked him more than Steven, but I wasn't like the biggest fan. But him in the fourth round, a guy at a third round grade for me, and I believe ended up as like RB6 for me, was great. You know, it was funny watching Chargers fans, because who are the two most popular names Chargers fans wanted about in a certain, you know, range, realistic range, right? One was Jerome Ford. The other one was Pierre Strong Jr. who are these guys that have those 40 times and have shown on tape they can hit those home runs. But then they take a player like Isaiah Spiller, who isn't a home run hitter, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, okay, power back. That's what we wanted. And, you know, how dare you question that, you know, they should have gotten a home run back. Whatever. But even though he's a bigger back than what the Chargers have, he's not a power back. Like, the numbers back that he's not an after contact sort of guy. You know, everyone kind of just jumped onto this idea that, you know, because of his weight, and, you know, and his RAS, whatever, like maybe he's just a power back, but that's really not what he does. And he's not a home run hitter, but what he does do, there's three things, at least I think, that he does or has, hopefully, that the Chargers didn't last year. One, pretty obviously, outside of Austin Eckler, I should say, he's one of the better pass catching backs in the draft. Like, that stood out to me immediately. I just finally put all the clips together for a film breakdown, and I've clips of him going, you know, the wheel, angle, swing, flat, whatever, like a good receiving back, not just a guy who catches the swing pass and runs, catches a screen and runs, but is actually used out wide, used out of the backfield, all that sort of stuff. So I think that's great for the Chargers. Again, I joke, but it's true. Isaiah Spiller has more receiving yards than Larry Roundtree right now in the NFL. And so him entering, you know, becoming a part of this team, that's one of the two things I wanted, right? For the Chargers, I either wanted a, you know, home run hit, RAS score freak sort of guy, or a good pass catcher. Now, of course, why did I like Rashad White? Because he was a good combination of those two things. But for the Chargers to get at least a guy who's a good pass rusher, pass catcher at the very least, is great. Like, I think that's undeniable. And then, you know, I think some of the frustrations we had with Roundtree, with Kelly, also being, you know, almost rookies, or Roundtree being a rookie, not really touching the ball that much, is that you need someone who can frequently make guys miss, those initial defensive penetrators miss, because it's not always going to be clean. But you have to make something out of nothing sometimes. You know, I think Breece Hall was great at that, and he went in the first round. And I think Isaiah Spiller, based on what I saw, now I did go back to 2020, that does give you a bit of a better look at him. I think Isaiah Spiller can definitely do that. He can at least make one guy miss. And Staley said, hey, you know, he's a guy who forced a lot of missed tackles. He's forced 100 missed tackles the last two seasons in the SEC. And, you know, that really speaks to what he can do there. And then finally, just overall, you have a guy, the last and maybe the most important thing, you just have a guy who can carry the rock, so Austin Eckler just doesn't have to as much. And that seems like you can give that to anybody, but I think he can legitimately actually carry an offense potentially, especially with this line that's going to be so much more, you know, so much better every year. I think he's a guy who can really do that and let Austin Eckler be your other receiver. You know, maybe the Chargers, I'm hoping this is the case, they didn't really address wide receiver in the draft, because use Austin Eckler. He's awesome. He is their wide receiver three right now. I could argue he could do as much in the passing game as Mike Williams. Maybe not really, but kind of. He's amazing. So, you know, he's familiar with everything the Chargers want to run. So he got, in terms of like just grading these guys, Isaiah Spiller got my third highest grade. You know, I gave him a B+. To me, you know, it's definitely a lot of it's about who he isn't, right? Which he's not an edge rusher, which is not a corner, whatever, something more valuable. And I did want them to wait a little bit longer, but you know, there's only so long you can wait. Isaiah Spiller, I think, fits a lot of what they need, even as not a home run hitter, even as not a power back by any means. I think he's a guy who's just going to hit the singles and doubles, money ball. He gets on base. I think he's just always going to make something positive happen for the Chargers. And that's something they just really didn't have last year on a consistent basis. So that's my favorite pick out of the big two that I love.
There we go. So we got a couple super stickers from Mama Shoon. Shout out Mama Shoon. And then Oregon Stacker said, amazing show, like always, bolt up. Uh-huh. So shout out to them. Very kind words and actions. So I'll jump in here about Spiller, because I feel like I'm going to be in between the two of you guys on this one, because I will say, you know, Spiller was my RB12 heading into the draft. He's not typically like the running back that I kind of gravitate towards. And, you know, maybe I was a little guilty of what I wanted the Chargers to do in that regard. But, you know, kind of going back and revisiting some of Spiller's tape pulled from this past year and in 2020, I think I have a much clearer vision for what, you know, he is as a player. And, you know, I totally understand the lack of athleticism in terms of his RAS. But, you know, reportedly he hit 20 miles per hour on GPS tracking this past year. So I think he has speed. I just don't think he's like a 40 kind of player. But I think what has kind of become clear to me is really just the style of runner that he is. And I really love his vision first and foremost, and his ability to kind of see things pop up before they are really developing. And that's something that Tyler kind of pointed out on Twitter in terms of his, you know, peripheral vision. And so I think he's a very solid running back. He's a very safe running back because of his vision, because of his elusiveness. And I was actually surprised to find on PFF, you know, they actually measure elusiveness rating, and he was second in the class this past year. If you just kind of filter it to the running backs with 50% of their carries, and specifically to this draft class. So he measured out very well in that regard, measured out very well in yards after contact, not in terms of like Kenneth Walker in missed forced tackles who had like 99 or whatever, just some absurd number last year. But I think he's just a really solid running back, and I like the way that he runs in terms of his patience, in terms of his vision. And unlike the other two running backs that are on the Chargers roster, I think he can actually have burst through the hole and see a hole opening up. And so that's kind of the difference. Like, I think Joshua Kelly is unequivocally a better athlete than Isaiah Spiller, but he cannot diagnose things, can't see things developing, whereas Spiller can. And like Tyler mentioned, I'm a big fan of the way he runs routes. I'm a big fan of just kind of the soft hands that he plays with. And so I can totally see the vision for the Isaiah Spiller pick. I think, like Tyler, I also kind of wish they would have taken an edge rusher or a corner. But I think Spiller's going to be a really good player for this team, man. And I think it just gives them more options. So I have become more positive on Spiller and his role, even though he's not typically like my kind of player. But, you know, again, I think he'll be kind of in the middle of what, you know, Tyler being his favorite pick and Alex probably being his least favorite pick.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start positive. I'm going to start negative. So I see everyone posting in the chat, oh, he's an SEC back. He has all these yards. Do we want to talk about who we did that with last year? Do we want to talk about how Larry Lerantry had 5,000 yards or so in the SEC? Okay. All right. Now I'll talk about the positive. I do think Isaiah Spiller is better than Larry Rountree and Joshua Kelly. What he can do receiving out of the backfield, good. I mean, I think he is a good enough route runner. I don't know how much he'll be asked to like contribute in those situations, just because I do think that is kind of more of an Austin Ekeler thing at this point. But I do think he is the best RB2 prospect the Chargers have had in a while. Not the one I would have gone for, obviously, but probably the best person who's had a chance since Justin Jackson to legitimately back up Austin Ekeler. Where I have a problem with this pick is obviously the round it was in. Now you can make the argument, and I know a lot of people have, where it's like the value was there, right? This was a guy who was supposed to go in the late second, early third round. So if you're getting him in the fourth, that's good value, right? But it's still the position not being a premium position. And really the athletic traits that you kind of want in a running back not really being there, right? And I know that this is going to get into like 40 time RAS stuff, but Spiller's not, I mean, he's not slow, but he did run a 4.64. And I, you know, for me, I think you need a little bit more of that natural speed in the NFL than you do in the SEC per se. Obviously, you know, he's kind of like a break tackle machine. The cuts are good, but for me, I think the lack of an ability to get to the second level quite as often is going to be a problem for you know, and I think that gets magnified, particularly in the NFL. I think when we're talking about these backs that are our prospects. So for me, that's kind of the thing that I don't like as much. And I think the big thing about Justin Jackson and why I think he was the second best or the best RB2 that Austin Ekeler really ever had is he was fast enough, but obviously bigger than Austin Ekeler and could make, you know, shifty enough movements, right? Like the philosophy after they drafted Justin Jackson just turned into, well, let's get this 6'5 running back who runs the slowest I've ever seen, right? Like that was kind of the idea of, okay, Joshua Kelly, Larry Rountree, obviously. Even going back to Kalen Ballage, right, in 2020, where it's like, okay, we have this 6'3 running back. We're going to bring him in. Eckler's hurt 1 week. Jackson's hurt 1 week. We're just going to bring this guy in. Didn't like really work out that well. So for me, I do see the upside of Spiller that you're getting, but I do think you do need a little bit more of that traditional speed, I guess. That's kind of one thing. And, you know, I'm just not sold that this was the right direction to go with this pick. And now we're talking about Tom Telesco as a GM who's I don't want to say he's wasted the Spiller pick because we don't know if he has or he hasn't yet. But he's now pulled three straight day three picks into running backs, which to me, as Arjun pointed out, doesn't seem to be using your picks that effectively. Obviously, we kind of all wanted them to draft a day three running back. But, you know, now Tom Telesco has taken 2 4th round running backs and a 6th. And so for me, that is something that just could have been used a little bit more effectively. So that is kind of like my problem with the Spiller pick. Do I think ultimately he'll be fine in being the RB2 and backing up Austin Eckler? Sure. Like, and I think he comes into the NFL with more raw attributes than you like with Joshua Kelly and certainly Larry Roundtree. But for me, the problem with this pick, and I think something that we'll just come to realize, is I think the vision is there, but I think without that top end speed, or at least kind of 4 or 5 speed, I do think that's going to get magnified in the NFL. And I don't think he's going to be breaking quite as many tackles or looking quite as shifty as he did in the SEC. And I do believe some of that will be revealed to be a little bit of a compiler trait like Larry Roundtree was. So for me, I like Isaiah Spiller enough to the point where I trust him to be the RB2 over Kelly and Roundtree. But this pick is a miss for me.
Yeah, I think if Isaiah Spiller is not the RB2, then, you know, we have serious problems in evaluation. Well, yeah. But
of course,
I really like the player at this point. I've come around on him, and, you know, revisiting that 2020 tape was fantastic for me and just kind of proved that I think he was kind of better that year. But it just the value and the process for me was a little off. So, and again, you know, it kind of just depends on what you're valuing and what the team is kind of heading into in looking for in this draft. And maybe they were just kind of set on drafting a running back in the 4th round and, you know, kind of viewed Spiller as kind of that last one that they would take. So, right. Again, you know, Spiller can certainly be successful. And I think in a world where you're not asking him to be like a true every down player, like he was at Texas A&M for the most part, then I think he'd be fine where the speed isn't like a deal breaker. But it definitely, to me, there's just kind of a disconnect between what we see from the outside zone heavy teams and what the Chargers approach has been, because even like Trey Sermon, right, who was, you know, their kind of bruiser, like AJ Dillon, their guys running, you know, low 4.5s, high 4.4s. They have RAS scores of, you know, 8 or 9. And not to say that that's the end all be all, but it's just an interesting case study for me when you're looking at who the Niners have drafted, who the Packers have drafted, you know, who the Jets have kind of prioritized as they're kind of diving into the outside zone stuff, and who the Rams have drafted. So it just is an interesting case study, I guess. But I do really like Spiller at this point. I've come around on him. I think he is going to be the best running back too that they have had. But again, that's kind of a low bar because Justin Jackson hasn't been healthy and the other two have been bad.
Yeah. I'll just say one more thing about Isaiah Spiller. The Chargers, I think, have gone about this as they want, you know, a bigger back, you know, traditionally to complement Eckler, right? Like that's been their process still with this Isaiah Spiller pick, even though I think he is more multidimensional than the other guys that they've drafted. Like that's what they've wanted. But if you do have a bigger, slower running back, when Austin Eckler, you know, gets worn down or Austin Eckler is injured and has to miss a game, I think that that makes it harder for, you know, that kind of running back to do the thing that Austin Eckler does, right? I'm not saying Jerome Ford just subs in for Austin Eckler and he would be great. Like that's not really what I'm saying at all. But I do think you want someone who has the potential to be that home run hitter, to catch out of the backfield, to be a little bit more athletic,
than, you know, just subbing in Spiller if Austin Eckler is getting, you know, a little bit worn down, because that's what happened last year, obviously, when Austin Eckler was begging for RB2 production. And so for me, I just see that as the Chargers process has been trying to get these guys to sort of like step up when Eckler hasn't, you know, been able to, or, you know, has gotten worn down at a certain point in the season. I'm just not sure if you just keep drafting bigger, taller, slower running backs that they're ultimately going to be able to do or replace some of the things that Eckler does when he isn't able to go out there.
I feel good about this one. I feel good about it.
Like I said, I feel like I'm kind of in the middle here, which is totally fine with me. The good news is obviously that, you know, it wasn't necessarily a perceived reach.
No, it wasn't.
You know, like if they had taken, you know, like who was the LSU running back that the Niners drafted that was like consensus RB like 15 and they took him in the third round. So this is fine value.
I forget his name. Doesn't he have two names or something like
Tyrion,
that?
It was like Tyrion David Price or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was fine value. I do think that if they hadn't taken one in the fourth round, they kind of would have just been screwed because there was that big run on running back. So like I said, I'm okay with the pick. It's not a sexy pick, but I think it's fine. So my favorite pick, I'll go next. I've talked a lot about Jamari Salyer, and I could certainly make an argument for him here, but I'm actually going to go with JT Woods, man. JT Woods is somebody that I've become a really big fan of, revisiting him and watching his film and kind of listening how he fits in terms of this specific scheme. And then also, like, the more I thought about it, the more I thought back of last season. There were specific moments in the season where they specifically lost games because they had issues on the back end. And so you talk about like the game against the Minnesota Vikings where, you know, they're really starting to put, you know, Nasir Adderley a little bit more in the box and the slot, and they're doing the same thing with Derwin James, and you have a guy like Trey Marshall in the back end of the defense. And I specifically remember this play on film where Justin Jefferson is running a go route on the left sideline, and Adam Thielen was like so obviously running an in-breaking route, and it was clearly like that's where the play was going to go. And everybody, I felt like everybody could tell, like when you're watching the film back, that it was going to Adam Thielen. It was like third and 14 in the fourth quarter. And I'm looking at Trey Marshall, and he, like, you can just tell on film that he had like zero confidence that he could make this play because he just couldn't. Like, he doesn't have that kind of burst, that kind of closing speed, and the ball skills to go make that play. If he had, then the Chargers would have won that game because they were still winning. They would have gotten that stop on fourth down. And then the Chargers would have had the ball and they would have won. So instead of Trey Marshall back there or Alohi Gilman, same kind of thing, just so limited athletically and with the ball skills, you just don't have that kind of athlete back there. So now you get JT Woods back there who ran a 4.39. And I think he's a little bit more raw than people are kind of realizing. And again, that's okay. He's a third round pick. There's specifically like tackling issues that he needs to clean up on. But you look at the speed, you look at the ball skills, and the instincts, which is something that me, Tyler, and Arjun sat down in looking at all of his missed tackles. He was always in the right spot. It's just the technique issues were not there. And so you look at JT Woods and the things that he can open up for this team, and specifically for Derwin James and Nasir Adderley, it's the theme of the offseason, right? It just gives him more options to do more things and be able to play more nickel, more dime, because JT Woods now has that athleticism. He has that skill set to be an eraser back there and make plays. Like another theme of the offseason, right? Like just go get the ball and go make a play. Last year, they didn't have that player, and it really balances out that safety room nicely with Mark Webb potentially being kind of a big nickel player for them or big box safety. And so if you fix the tackling issues, which I feel confident that they can, because he does have such a good processor, then I think you're looking at a very high upside player here, not just kind of a dart throw third round pick that everybody was kind of saying like, oh, this is just Telesco doing his normal third round shit. Like, I think JT Woods legitimately has the upside here to be a very high quality player for them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I was just trying to show some of what he can do. just that first play, you guys can see it if you're watching. If you're not watching, then it does feel very different than what, like, so there's not, it is a reach, but it's like a round reach, and I could justify the reach even though it is one. I do think get him around later, but hey, I get it. Like, at the very least, I understand why they would go after someone like this. Like, you can see him,
yeah,
you know, in the yellow arrow here, and just how he triggers downhill and is able to make plays like this, something that it took years for Nasir Adderley to figure out how to do. Now, there's also some misses in here, don't get me wrong, but what he can do and what his instincts, like, everyone had this I word, instincts, intelligence, whatever it is. Like, everyone had something related to him just being a smart football player. And I believe he was a 5-time honor roll guy too. Like, by the way, the Chargers taking everybody with a PhD is ridiculous. Like, I can't believe yeah, how many geniuses are in this draft class. But he's just, there's so much to work with there. Like, you know, he is a project. He's going to not be great year one. Like, he's not going to be the great safety year one by any means.
Right.
But there's so much to work with there. The two guards are my favorite, but after Spiller, so fourth, Woods was my next favorite, because again, even like Spiller, while you might have wanted something else, you can still see the vision. You get the plan for why they took him. Like, I understand why JT Woods is now a member of the Los Angeles Chargers and why they took him in the third round, because he's very talented and the Chargers just did not have that. You know, we're talking about RAS scores on this show. Mark Webb, Alohi Gilman, what is it? 4-3. You know, Mark Webb's is awful. Alohi Gilman's is fine, I think. You know, you finally get someone back there to move your players around. It's a great ripple effect. It's great for what the team wants to do. I like Woods a lot.
I was a little bit confused by the JT Woods pick when it first happened. And sort of, you know, we did kind of get into like, oh, could have been around earlier. Like, they needed offensive tackle here. But for me, I think the kind of player that you're getting that you could just kind of plug into this Staley system, it's honestly like a seamless fit into him getting into that Derwin Naz, Woods rotation, and then the ability to kind of replace Adderley. And I don't think the tackling thing is as much of a problem as maybe I thought it was when the pick was initially made, because I do think you watch the film and those issues are pretty correctable, whether Staley corrects them or not, or whether Woods corrects them or not, remains to be seen. But for me, I think there's a lot to like about the JT Woods pick, even though you can make the argument that maybe they could have gone someone else there.
Yeah, I think they could, right? But I think from an athletic profile standpoint and just kind of what their fit is going to be for him, like, he's going to come in and contribute right away, and he's going to be, you know, that third safety, potentially match up with some tight end. So he's not going to have to be asked to be on an island, you know, filling the run and making a ton of tackles like the one that we just showed against TCU. And then, you know, we talked about safety as a sneaky need, right? And potentially you're looking at a team without Nasir Adderley next year. So, you know, JT Woods can become that guy in 2023. So, like Tyler mentioned, I mean, obviously Zion's like my favorite, right? Like, he was a guy who I was championing for, and I mentioned Sawyer, but I think Woods was, I just wanted to spotlight him for a little bit. Alex, favorite pick of the draft, man?
Say fullback.
Okay. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Jamari Salier first, because we all did our preamble. It's like, I could talk about Jamari Salier, but I'm going to talk about someone else. I really do like the Salier pick. I mean, the value that they got there is great. You know, obviously, like Tyler said, kind of medical withstanding, depending on, you know, how that goes. But I think the value they got there is great. I will talk about the only Alex who is on the Chargers. That is Alexander Xander Horvath.
There you go.
I left the draft in like the sixth round, and I came home and I saw the seventh round pick was a fullback. I was like, what the fuck are they doing? and that was like my initial reaction. But then I saw, you know, Xander Horvath play, and I'm like, okay, this is something to work with. Obviously the RAS is there, tested like a freak. But like, to me, like, it shows up on tape. Like, obviously he can receive out of the backfield, has played a little bit of fullback, running back, and tight end. And, you know, this kind of brought me back to the 2020 offseason, which was the famous Gabe Neighbors, Bobby Holly election to the fullback.
You just had to bring it up, man. Gotta keep twisting that knife.
Man, recount.
and the selling point for, Gabe Neighbors was – versatility, mm-hmm. versatility. And Gabe Neighbors all of last year was a healthy scratch. Yeah. Like, so they didn't, you know, obviously different coaching staffs, but they really didn't end up using him. So for me, this pick shows a guy who I think might be the best running back that they took on day three. Okay. I'm just at this point. kidding. But I do think, you know, you can legitimately use him as a pass catching option out of the backfield. And, you know, to me, having a fullback with more utility and more versatility than Neighbors at this point, I think is a huge upgrade. And he just seems like a guy that can, I think, be sort of a yak monster, like even in the NFL. I don't think you're going to see him like actually show up on the running back depth chart, like I said today. Or, you know, I guess he would kind of be like a tight end four and like maybe that Steven Anderson kind of role. Like maybe that's kind of where he'll show up as well. But to me, getting a fullback who I think is a factor in the game. Yeah, it's not a sexy pick. But again, we're in the seventh round. And I think this is probably like the best like immediate impact guy you could have gone for at that point. So for me, I like Alex Horvath.
I'm really curious what he ends up doing for the Chargers, because obviously they let Steven Anderson go. And when he was, when Horvath was drafted, they said, oh, you know, fullback. But like I'm showing these clips and I went through and it was maybe one blocking play per game in the run game. Like there's some pass protection, sure, but that was natural as him being a running back for them. He just blocked on third down or whatever. This guy is a weapon out of the backfield. I'm really curious if they do away with that H-back sort of Steven Anderson type of role and just go with a more weaponized fullback role like Gabe Neighbors should have been. So I think that initially they took fullback. I'm like, okay, well, Steven Anderson replacement. And maybe he could be. If anyone can take a guy who barely blocked and turn him into a really good blocking H-back, it's Kevin Coger, who did that with Steven Anderson. But based on his role in college, he only had 37 running blocking snaps.
Yeah.
So like, what is his role?
Right.
I think it ends up being just that weaponized, you know, fullback sort of type. And, you know, it's blasphemous, but he does compare favorably in the RAS score to a certain 49ers fullback as well. Not saying they're the same. Juszczyk also blocks the hell out of his job for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's definitely some similarities there in terms of a weapon. So, I don't think he's the best running back they took on day three by any means. I know. But I could see why he could be, for his seventh round value, you know, a legit weapon for this team. And technically, if you count him as a starter, they added a starter in the seventh round that could be used for, you know, a couple touchdowns here, a couple runs there. So, you know, again, would it have been nice to go edge rusher and probably just sign this guy as an undrafted free agent? Probably. But again, I can see the role for him. A weaponized fullback sounds pretty cool to me. But also, what team are the Chargers? Like, we can talk about this later, but what team are the Chargers becoming? Are they a run-first, run-heavy team with Justin Herbert as their quarterback? Is Herbert going to run more this offseason? Because they just got guards and guards and guards and fullbacks and running backs from the SEC. Like, what team are we this year?
Yeah. No, it's an interesting trend, and the Chargers kind of going towards this path. And I almost wonder, right, like how much influence did the best player available approach have with them? Because you kind of feel like that was the vibe that we got from them in terms of Zion and JT Woods and Jamari Salyer, at minimum, were clearly the best players on their board. And now you take this fullback. And I have to say, like, from a roster construction standpoint, I'm a fan of this pick, like, alone. Because in my head, I was like, okay, like, they're going to try and replace the Steven Anderson role. And, you know, I had them taking Chase Allen with the 260 pick in our dueling mock drafts. And I was like, okay, like, here's your H-back type. And now you don't need four tight ends and a fullback, because, you know, if you take a tight end who you're trying to do the H-back stuff with, you still have Gabe Neighbors and you're still like talking yourself into Gabe Neighbors. Now they can just keep three tight ends and the one fullback, Xander Horvath, and then you free up a roster spot. So that's the positive takeaway, just from a roster building standpoint, that they're not going to have to waste a spot on either the tight end. You know, Trey McKitty was inactive for the first half, and then it was Gabe Neighbors. Now you just keep the three tight ends, the one fullback, and we're good. We don't have to keep another roster spot for somebody instead of like a defensive lineman or a defensive end or a corner or whatever. So I don't know.
Yeah. Tom Telesco hears that and he's going to go 4 quarterbacks, 5 running backs this year.
He's going to keep the undrafted quarterback from Illinois as well as Easton Stick and Chase Tank. But no, I think the Xander Horvath pick, it just gives him more versatility, because with Gabe Neighbors, right? Like, he was a tight end in college. He wasn't a fullback in college.
Right.
And so you're like teaching him the fullback stuff. And now with Xander Horvath, like, you're going to teach him the fullback stuff, but he's also a capable runner and pass catcher. So he's got most of it down. It's just, he's going to have to work on the blocking, but the man is built like an absolute tank. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to be able to learn how to block effectively. So, you know, Xander probably much lower on my list in terms of favorites, but again, I can see the path forward here. I like the roster building process, and maybe he does become their Kyle Juszczyk, man. I think like that's a fun outcome, obviously.
Right. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I watched all 37 Xander Horvath pass or run blocking snaps. Like, that's not what I did. But in the blocking snaps that I did watch, I thought I saw a guy who is a willing blocker, right? Like, you know, there was never a point where I thought he like backed down from it or, you know, just got roasted like doing it. So for me, sort of in the vein of what we talked about with JT Woods and the tackling problem, like, I think that is something that's fixable in the NFL, and it's easier to, you know, kind of learn how to block, you know, as someone who's already experienced the fullback than learn how to play fullback in the vein of Gabe Neighbors, like Steven just said.
Sure.
Yeah. And along what Steven already said too about, you know, now you only have to carry 3 tight ends and a fullback. I think the same thing was with Spiller. You know, you don't have to worry about Jackson's health. Or which running back do we want to keep between these other two? Maybe Bradwell. No, I think you can actually just keep 3 running backs now and a fullback. So I think you do save a tight end spot, and I do think you save a running back spot with their picks. So that is going to be critical. I think that does save some of the jobs for someone like it could be Keymon Hall. It could be Braden Fajoka. It could be Joe Gaziano, whatever. Like, I think you can find other ways to get some of these guys that you should have kept early and now actually keep them on your roster this year, rather than let, you know, John Brannon, was that was his name last year? You know, again, Cortez Broughton, Tyron Johnson, those guys maybe could stick around this year if they don't carry 4 running backs and 4 tight ends and a fullback. But cross my fingers.
And 3 quarterbacks and all this other shit. So, again, I really hope that the roster management is something that Brandon Staley improves upon this year. So, all right, we'll do there are a couple of questions in here that I do want to get to, but we're going to do kind of a depth chart analysis next episode. And so we'll kind of answer some of those questions. You know, Wrong Speedy asking about the right tackle position and how, you know, Tom Telesco's comments may have changed a little bit. But we'll wrap it up here with just class grades. Obviously, we're not going to go pick by pick. It's already been an hour, 20 minutes. So, Alex, we'll start with you. Your grade for the 2022 Chargers draft class.
I'll go B. I mean, for me, there were enough value picks to the point, you know, I mean, I gave 3 of the individual picks an A in terms of Zion Johnson, Salier, and Horvath. Like, I thought those were all good value for what you're getting in those rounds. And while I have a problem with the Spiller pick still, I still think you see enough there to the point where he's a more capable RB2 than the other guys. And, you know, I don't believe he has like high upside, but can at least play immediately. You know, some of the draft in terms of the high upside is like limited a little bit by the fact that they didn't have a second round pick and weren't able to go in that direction. But for me, I thought JT Woods was a solid pick, and there was no pick where, even though I didn't really like the process on Spiller, where I was like, man, that pick sucked. And, you know, obviously with Larry Roundtree, that was how I was like last year. Didn't really like the Alohi Gilman pick, you know, in the year prior where they just went completely off the board. So for me, there weren't really any of those big reaches that we've seen in previous seasons from the Chargers and obviously other teams in the draft as well. So for me, I'll go with a B.
I will also go with a B. Again, it's not as much about the players that were selected, because I can go through here and tell you how, unfortunately, I don't feel that who was the corner they took later?
Leonard.
I don't feel that he's going to contribute, and I think there's a chance he doesn't make the roster. But I could make a case for how 7 out of 8 of these guys contribute, you know, fit with the team, all that. Some good value, some maybe not so good value. So I think it's a nice B, and that's kind of feels about right. You know, I watched Bootleg Football Podcast, and those guys, you know, put together a list of honorable mentions and then their top three favorite drafts. And the honorable mentions had like 15 teams on it for some reason. And then they had their top three, and the Chargers didn't make one of those 15 honorable mentions. So they might have been in the one after that. I don't know, but it just kind of feels like a good draft. Pretty good. To me, I think a lot of this could hinge on Sailor. No, that doesn't hinge on Sailor, but like you could bump this thing to an A pretty quick. If you're telling me that he's competing and wins right tackle, that changes a lot. But based on the way things are right now, it's a B. Like, I think it's a solid draft with good players who fit what they want, who will contribute. I just, the grade is lowered because I don't know who their edge four or potentially three is.
Yeah, I think there are enough question marks for me to be like, okay, this isn't an A, even though I think picking Zion is an A. But to me, really the only pick that I didn't like, or that I at least don't like understand, is the Dean Leonard one. Cause I just like, I don't see how he has a clear cut path to making the roster this year. So you're essentially wasting a pick right there. And maybe that, you know, Dean Leonard becomes kind of a solid depth corner for them. I don't really know, but it's just tough after the Bryce Callahan signing, which is official, by the way. Chargers did post that. But yeah, I think it's a B for me. You know, we'll the Jamari Sailor thing is something that we are going to discuss in terms of his potentially starting at right tackle. That's something that Brandon Thorne mentioned in his article recently, his post-draft notebook. And so if is their starting right tackle, right, then that changes things. So, but I think it's a very solid draft. Obviously not a super sexy draft that's going to steal a lot of headlines. You know, there's not a ton of, you know, Chargers are the winners of the draft kind of takes going around. But I think the Chargers just needed to become a more balanced team. I think they needed to become a deeper team. And I think for the most part, they did that outside of the edge rusher position. So I think we're all on the same page that we like this draft. Don't love it. Don't dislike it.
Yep.
About Bryce Callahan's deal, I don't think anybody has tweeted the official marks there yet. I can't imagine it's super high. We know it's a 1-year deal, but financially we don't know that number. So so we'll kind of see what happens there. We have tons of post-draft content coming for you guys later on this week. I actually just jumped off of an interview with the Georgia beat writer for 247 Sports. Gave me a lot of good information on Jamari Sailor, who, like I said, we'll talk more about at a later date. And then Nick Cothra from Sports Illustrated joined me. So I'm going to do interviews with all of the 247 Sports writers that I can get my hands on and talk about some of these picks. And a certain draftee is going to be joining Maddie Schmidt potentially in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that one. As always, if you're listening to the audio version of this, please leave us a rating or a view. If you're watching this in the stream or replay, make sure and like, subscribe, all that good stuff. And yeah, that's going to do it for us today, guys. As always, thanks for the support and the all the comments today, all the super chats. We'll see you next time.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.